Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So the other day I was at a hotel and I came across this article in the newspaper, and it said how Gen Z is finding new ways to travel, and it caught my attention that Gen Z is affecting a lot more than we think. And so I think that's going to be a great conversation today. Boston, it's good to have you on GodQuest, and you are married. Haley, you have two kids, Echo and Yale. How old are they?
2 months.
Which means very little sleep.
No sleep. That's whatever that means. The no sleep stage stuff.
And you are the youth pastor at the Rock Church, and doing an outstanding job, as well as a church planter. Talk about your church. Where's your church at?
My church is in Cameron Park.
Which is where?
It's in the foothills of the Sierras.
Okay.
It's beautiful. You should all move there.
And this is not your first church plant.
No, sir. This is my second.
Where was that?
We started a church in Dixon, California. And then after about a year, we moved to Winters, California, where the church is now pastored by Cesar Lua.
Yeah, it's doing outstanding. I was just there the other day. Proud of the Lua family, doing an amazing job. And so I want to get into what you're diving into right now as youth pastor, as well as church planter, and some unique things I want to get into related to church planting and youth ministry, because you're kind of doing something pretty cool. We'll talk about that. You have a master's degree from Wilson University, and you are nearing the end zone of a doctorate from where's your doctorate from?
My doctorate is from Corbin University in Salem, Oregon.
Okay.
And my dissertation that I am drowning in at the moment, my dissertation, the topic is Gen Z and leadership, but specifically integrating Gen Z into the leadership of the Rock Church would be the case study. But then the actual focus is Gen Z.
So when you say integration, what does that look like? What led you to take a dissertation to that level?
So what led me to take to go for a dissertation in Gen Z, essentially, that's kind of the overall subject, is I'm studying Gen Z for my doctorate. So the reason I'm focused on Gen Z is because if you go to a conference or anything, everyone keeps talking about millennials, and literally it's a waste of time because millennials were past that generation. That's the generation gone by. The majority of the population of your city, the majority of the population of America is Gen Z.
Okay, when you say the millennial generation and Gen Z, where's the distinction? Is it a hard line or is it kind of foggy?
It's kind of foggy, and this is where it gets very, very squishy.
Okay.
Is even Gen Z, and it's debatable and people will argue whatever, but even Gen Z, there's quite a bit of academic research that Gen Z is the last generation that we can follow the traditional generational metrics, because the world has changed so fast in Gen Z's lifetime that even within generation to generation, there's generations within the generation. So if you're Gen Z pre-iPhone, you grew up in a world vastly different, and you were imprinted by a world vastly different than the world post iPhone.
So there's variation,
there's
even
variation
in Gen Z.
Even
so
within.
So where is the, like, when you're discussing Gen Z at Corbin University, what age group, like what year did that start?
So
or generally?
Generally it would be late 90s would be the
so basically since 9/11.
No,
a little bit before?
It would be a little before.
Okay.
Depending on what source, who you're looking at is kind of, but it would be basically the easiest way to say it, instead of getting specific to a year would be who's in your youth group right now.
Okay.
They're Gen Z.
Okay.
Okay. Your Gen Z, and then the majority of your new college age students would be Gen Z as well.
Okay. So,
but okay, I just, the mentality of Gen Z is very different too. So you have to even think there's certain.
Do you mean within Gen Z?
Within Gen Z. So the reason I want to be uber specific is you have to get uber specific, and you have to keep it vague enough at a meta level that you can, you know, encapsulate the entire Gen Z. But then within Gen Z, you have to focus in on certain time periods within Gen
Okay,
Z.
So let me see if I can unpack that in a way. You have been the youth pastor now here for how many years?
Eight.
8 years. And then you were on the youth staff for a year, a couple of years before that.
Two or three.
Okay, so let's make it 13 years. You've been through several cycles from coming out of high school into college. So and now you've got young people in that amount of time who are now married, maybe even having kids that were in that first youth group you had, that would, if they were considered early Gen Zers, now you got a new generation of Gen Zers. Do you see a radical difference in culturally,
yeah.
Emotionally?
Yeah. Emotionally, culturally, everything. So it's really, you can see why it's a very interesting topic, and you can go as deep as you want. And there's a lot of research.
So you said something, the majority of your city, that was just a blanket statement. So was that just an overgeneralization, or is that a pretty accurate
that's
thing?
Actually, statistically, the majority of America is Gen Z.
Really?
Yeah. So every other generation, the majority of.
Which is interesting, because they're saying that now we have more old people than we have ever had, which we're seeing exponential growth in society. But that's pretty amazing that the majority of people in our communities are in the Gen Z category. Now, we hear a lot about, seems easy to pick on Gen Z. And there's a lot of talk, a lot of jokes, a lot of challenges there. And which is interesting to me, because when I hear these negative statements about Gen Z, I'm kind of the guy, like, if there's a guy sticking at the circus, sticking his head in the lion's mouth, I'm wondering, like, who is the guy that thought of that? Like, so I'm trying to get the backstory on stuff. And I'm thinking, if Gen Z has all of these issues, they got these issues from somewhere. So really, if there's a blame, it's easy to blame Gen Z, but the previous generation is what created Gen Z.
Yeah.
So what are you seeing? Talk about the challenges or obstacles, maybe is a better. What are the things at youth ministry that there's a lot of negativity out there? What are some of those things?
So just simple rates is the majority of Gen Z. I'm just going to throw out a boatload of negatives.
Okay.
The majority of Gen Z, I would say, I think it's just boys and girls, I think it's 78% or something, are addicted to pornography.
Okay.
The average age of exposure is like before 10. Most don't get driver's license. Most don't, you know, just go down the list of things that we think of as millennials and boomers and that we think of as normal. They are not going about that path. There's all these they're more iPhone obsessed. They have
okay. So let me interrupt. So they're not getting license. Is that because there's not a need to travel? Or
well,
I
no.
Mean, they've
so
also got Uber now.
Yeah. So let me. I'm throwing out all my negatives.
Okay.
And then I can go back and show you why I don't actually think they're negatives.
Okay.
Especially for the church, maybe for society as a whole. But this isn't about society as a whole. This is about God quests and the things of God. So the society as a whole thing is not, the negatives are actually positives for us.
Okay.
The culturally, the weakening, the softening, the lessening of men, the the if you look, every major television show, everything is downgrading men, is making men out to be stupid, is making men out to be weak.
And they've grown up in
They've grown up in that. Okay. Okay. So these are all kinds of negatives. Just, and you could go, I don't like to talk about the negatives because there's a million, and that's all you hear about is how bad our society is, how bad our culture is, how, you know, how bad Gen Z, all these kids today, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And it's true. And someone else, there's plenty of other people talking about that. So they can do that job for me. But to me, those societal negatives are not actually negatives.
Okay.
Is just pick one of the negatives. Just
okay. So let's start with the first one. You said pornography, a large amount of addiction to pornography.
Pornography is there's not a lot of positives with the pornography right. one. Okay. So that one is a huge negative. That being said.
But it's not the first generation that struggled with that.
That's where I was. It's not the first generation to struggle with it. It's not the first. They're the most exposed.
Okay.
But there's also growing. Part of the deal is we love to, all the older generations, millennials, everybody like to hate on Gen Z. But the church didn't really have a huge, you know, I don't remember even as a millennial. It wasn't until my older teenage years that people started, you know, talking about getting over pornography and breaking addiction and struggling and that kind of stuff. Well, these kind of
kept
kids,
something that was kept and in so the shadows.
Kids that kept these things in the shadow in my generation, and their lives spun out of control because they had this secret sin that nobody knew about. Well, now the church is actually, it's a new thing. So we've understood how to deal with it, how to cope with it.
And there's an awareness that this is a real problem, real struggle. So maybe we're able to talk about it more and maybe help more
and help work and help.
So let me pick one and you can unpack this. So this article is called TikTok Takeover, How Gen Z is Finding New Ways to Travel. And it just caught my attention. And in the article, it said something about my generation, the generations prior, their idea of going on a vacation will be go to the beach resort, all inclusive, go to the five restaurants at the resort, do the deal on the beach, and it's all inclusive, and you go to this cloistered microcosm of dreams. But Gen Z in the article says they don't want to be in the resort on the beach with all the tourists. They want to be up in the mountains or in the desert, in the village, experiencing culture. Would you agree with that statement?
Yes, I would agree. And I would also say is that your generation's version of paradise is their generation's version of a nightmare. Is the idea of going halfway around the world to go experience where I live, just with more palm trees and more sand, is literally the worst thing I could imagine.
So that's in the thinking.
Yeah, well, so this is the idea, is you guys didn't grow up watching and being able to constantly connect with the outside world.
Okay.
You're a missionary's grandson. You're connected to, you know, major organizations growing up. Is you probably have a bigger world view than the average person. But growing up, how you did not constantly interact with and talk to people in Europe and South America and Central America and Asia and stuff. You didn't have.
Or if we found out about it, we had to go get an encyclopedia.
No, I'm saying on a friend group. Okay, so this is where it's so different. Is I have friends literally in everywhere from Australia to Central America to Europe to the Middle East that I talk with at least once a week and have relationship and friendship with, and there's connection. At the very least, I follow them on Instagram, they follow me on Instagram, and we're connected. There's a friend group connection. There's a real want to experience, want to connect. It's not just this esoteric Hawaii of our dreams. I can see Hawaii every day, and I can see this coffee shop that this cool person goes to every day in Hawaii. And so even my view about the world.
So the world got
very, very small.
Very small.
And they're better informed. They're better. Everything isn't so scary just because it's different. Everything, if I'm going to, you know, a foreign country, it's not uncomfortable. I've been looking at it on Instagram.
And you can Google all of the issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can definitely understand that. I remember the days of Rand McNally roadmaps as an evangelist. I don't even know if you know what that is. There, okay. You would go by at the gas station, you would buy big maps, and you would try and figure out where you were and keep it in the car, keep it between the seat. Now you don't even have to know where you're going. Just follow the magenta line.
Yeah.
You know, and just go. But it works overseas.
Yeah, I've done it in an airplane.
That's a whole other story. We'll have to talk about that another time. But I've been overseas, and with my iPhone, even in a country where I don't speak the language, I'm able to follow the magenta line, and it directs me in my language in a foreign country. So their world is a lot different than mine.
Yeah. And so think about, if you've learned that, their default is that. Okay, so you've learned that. So we love to use this one, you know, how can I think the way they thought in the book of Acts? Like, we're okay. Trying to get into perspective. We're trying to get into the mindset, okay? And so we have to work to get there. But then how sick would it be if we could actually get in the mindset? Like, we're trying to find all the cultural things and like, oh, they would read it from this perspective, whatever. Well, that's where me and you as outsiders, you know, I didn't grow up with an iPhone until I was, you know, I had a flip phone was my first phone. Okay. So they're growing up where they're constantly connected to the outside world. They constantly have access to unlimited information. They constantly have access to cars. They don't need to drive. Why would you drive? I think you should drive. So I'm not saying you shouldn't drive. This is in their mind. Why do I need to drive? I could call an Uber. Car costs $5,000 and then I got to pay gas. Well, I just will pay $30 to get around. And you look online, this is one of the big.
So does this mean that there's actually a sense of frugality potentially in them?
Definitely when compared to millennials. Okay. 100%.
Is that data or is that just estimation?
No, that's data.
Really?
That's data. Okay, so positives just from a data standpoint, much less. Consumerism would be the wrong word because they consume more media and stuff like that than anyone, but much less. As you know, with millennials, it was bling, it was that. There's a definitely statistically, there's still, you know, there's
branding, you know, is still a part.
Branding is a big part, but it's different than, you know, just status branding.
Okay.
So branding is still a part, but it's different than status branding. But so things like complete brain freeze. Go ahead. What was your question?
I was asking frugality. Are you seeing, is that one of the positives? Like there, you gave the example that we're not, why would I buy a car? It's going to cost me $30,000 when I can just Uber for $10 to cross town.
So yes, it's not frugality necessarily. What it really is, they're a lot more, they've been, so culturally, think Gen Z, 9/11, 2008 crisis. Okay, so those things are imprinting, those things are marking. Those are things that so millennials, we grew up when it was just gravy. You know, I was, you know, 16, I don't even know how old I am, however old I was by the time the 2008 crisis hit. I had already, my identity as a human being was already well set on its way. Well, so I have this world of surplus, world of ease, worlds of, you know.
And then that drastically changed.
And then everything changes in 2008 for me. Well, my childhood years were lived in a very different America than my latter years. For Gen Z, they didn't grow up with national surplus. They didn't grow up with economic freedom in that way. So they do strive for a sense of security a lot more than millennials do.
Okay.
But they also, this is where it's kind of topsy-turvy, is that why it's, with Gen Z, the one thing you'll notice is everything, there's a very big caveat with what you say. Okay. So they strive for security. Okay. That is 100% true. But then at the same time, the other side of that coin is because of you're the interviewer, but let me ask you a question. Okay. So at 18 years old, who was your biggest financial inspiration or person you looked up to at 18 years old?
It's a good question.
Or did you have one?
I think in, obviously I'm looking back, I'm 56. At 18, I don't know how big even financial dreams I had, because the world was pretty much limited to the people I knew.
Exactly.
Or the business people that were in my world. I had no access to media growing up in an apostolic home. Obviously we didn't have a television. And, you know, it was whatever I read about in a book that
Rich,
I went to
Richie
the library.
Rich.
Whatever I went to the library to get, or I got at school, or whatever mentor. So this generation, I can see, definitely has exposure to a much broader world than mine at this age.
Yeah. So at 16 years old, you're looking at 16-year-olds that are making $500,000. And they don't seem any different than you. They don't seem it's not out of the realm of possibility that you could do that. It's not a consumerism per se, but there's a comparison issue of that's positive or negative, and it's kind of up to the church to how to spin that.
And this isn't a cultural geographically based thing, because the internet is connected whether you're in Tucumcari or Bangladesh or Sacramento, mm-hmm. New York, or somewhere in Wisconsin or Idaho. They're getting access to the same amount of information.
You compared yourself to, if you were trying to be the best basketball player at your school, or the best looking person at your school, or make the most money at your school, okay, that was kind of the height of mm-hmm. of success. Well, now there's 77,000 influencers that are better than you if you're the best at your school. And so there's a comparison level of it. You could see how it could be a positive, is if it's not channeled right, it becomes this weight.
Yeah.
But if it's channeled right, it becomes impetus of you actually becoming.
So if there's all of this ability to tap into influencers or to get information, that means people are stepping into that gap and are influencing mm-hmm. And are making disciples, for lack of a better term, followers. To me, I see this, and I'm an immigrant, as they say, to this new world. And I don't know all the paths to go, but it seems like to me, if the world is this connected and Gen Z is this involved, then there can be a real opportunity. So let's move from the obstacles and challenges, the negatives. Let's go to the positive. What does this look like? It seems like, as I was reading the article, there seems to be causality. There's cause. They're looking for a purpose. And I think we all are innately, but they're very dissatisfied. If they're going to get involved, it's like they don't get involved in a lot, but when they do, they're all in.
Yeah, they're very movement. They're very purpose-based. It's very different than millennials. Is millennials were self-purpose based. Is,
okay.
You know, our my favorite little quip about it is our moms told us we could be anything we wanted to be, so we grew up and became women. And the rest of us live in vans and think it's cool. So that was kind of follow your dreams, woo, woo, hippy dippy. You know, okay, so that was kind of the millennial mindset. Well, the Gen Z sees how stupid that idea was.
Yeah.
The whole like follow your dreams and become nothing thing.
So do you think the loss of identity of this generation is coming out of all of that previous? Like, how do we get where we are in society right now?
So, well, in 1842 in Western Ukraine, no. As
that sounds like the Putin interview.
So
just don't go back that far.
No, so there's definitely a, you know, Gen Z rejects kind of the ideals of millennials because they see the negative. But
heavily influenced by it.
Yes, heavily influenced, but see the negative. But to me, that's a positive.
Okay.
Because the things that my generation was awful at, I don't want Gen Z emulating. And they're not. Those are the things that they pushed away the most. I'm like, this might be surprising to people, but Gen Z, there is actually a very strong push towards actually, you know, the data will reveal this, but, and your experience will reveal this, there is a push towards purpose. Very okay. strong push towards
so purpose. So is this why, and I think I may have mentioned this on a podcast before previously, the youth group, okay, under your leadership, we've had exponential growth in the youth group, but let me just throw this out there. The whole COVID deal was a nightmare, okay? We're pastoring California, all of that. But what was incredible is the youth group thrived. The youth group grew through this process. And I'm looking at young people that became stronger in their faith, that were already connected. It was like it wasn't even a bobble for them. And I'm not belittling it. I don't mean it that way. But it didn't seem to phase them the same way it did the older generation.
No, because they are connected, and they their network. This is, it's so hard for us to get our brains there. Is they're connected. They have a world. They have identity. They have connection points.
Now the scary thing of that is they're so good at that. It's easy to be manipulated again in the future with that. I see the negative, but from a church standpoint, they came out of COVID. The youth group that I'm working with, that you're leading, and I've talked to a number of other pastors, they're the ones that got it seem to get it.
Yeah, because they've been through. Okay, so this is whole. This is, we'll get all the way into it. Is that they've been through more stuff at 16 years old or 18 years old than my generation went through until we were in our 30s. They've been through more stuff at 16 or 18 years old than your generation went through until you were in your 50s or 60s.
They're post 9/11. Their world's radically different.
Exposed. They've had to deal with the one. Okay, so we're switching from just like general America. We're going church kids. Okay, the church kids we have. So if you wonder why American boys and girls are so fragile. It's everything we just talked about. And then it's the fact that they've been battered for the last, you know, their entire lives have just been one thing after another. Yeah. Okay. But the kids that are still in church, the post-COVID Pentecostal kids, apostolic kids, those kids have been exposed to pornography since the time they were 10 years old. They've been through COVID where they're literally locked in their house. They've been exposed to unlimited media
by a supposed Christian nation.
That's a joke. Actually, the largest statistically, the largest group of people in America, especially in Gen Z, this is like off the boards, is nuns.
Nuns, as in don't identify
little,
with
on
anything.
The little dot when you scribble in nun. That's Gen Z are.
So
nuns.
What's your religion?
Nuns. They're nuns.
Okay.
So that's their which. Is also a plus because it's a lot easier to teach someone than to unteach them.
So we're not having to, they don't identify with faith at all.
No. They believe in a God. The majority believe in a God, and they're actually much more spiritual.
Yeah, that's why we see the rise of the occult and things of that nature.
They're much more spiritual, but they're just not religious because the church, the American secular church is so... You know, all the gut. Okay, it's also why there's a rise in Islam is all the guts is cut out of Christianity, and it's just this weak, limp-wristed, doesn't stand for anything.
Denominational Christendom.
Puny Christendom. Okay, but this is okay. So you see,
churches, the evangelical church in America is dying.
Yes, and it's weak, and it doesn't actually. You don't have to live anyway. You don't have to be anything. You don't have to any of that kind of stuff. Well, these kids. Okay, so that's we'll go that I'll go on another tangent for 20 minutes about that. How. That's actually the greatest day for us, for the apostolic church, is the in a world where everyone is operating at a four. Okay. When, in a world, okay, so all these negatives that everyone likes to pick on is, you know, this is for real, is the Gen Z, they've been battered. We're just,
right.
They've been battered. They've been... Mentally, they've been abused. Their media has constantly just messed with their brains and literally tried to...
A nation divided.
Nation divider.
Economic.
Okay.
Yeah, the list goes
on. All that, that's the world that these kids grew up in, 100%. Okay. So there is a level of just kind of off the, you know, just what almost shell shockedness with Gen Z that we all like to preach about and talk
traumatized.
About. And okay. And so the operating level of a lot of Gen Z is much lower than it should be. Let's say compared to your generation, you know, let's say you guys were operating greatest generations at 10, you guys are like a 7, millennials are a 5. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's say Gen Z is operating at a 4 or a 5, probably a 4 is the realistic as far as efficiency, effectiveness, all that kind of stuff. Well, that's so terrible. In the church, we can just bemoan the weakening of America or the kids of America, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Unless you recognize Pentecost, you're required to be a man or a woman of God.
Right.
Pentecost preaches purpose above all else. You have a purpose. You have a unique set of skills. You are called for a reason. Every member and minister helping people become, it's everything that we are as apostolics and Pentecostals. And so you come into church and you have to line up. You have to take care of yourself. You have to be a man or woman. It matters how you dress. It matters how you present yourself. It matters your language. It matters that you hold yourself with dignity. And everything you do matters. Well, let's just say there's a kid that's not very bright, doesn't have it all together. In your world, just let's say even intellectually, he's capable of, at his very best, he's a 6. Okay, in your world, he won't be very successful. In this world, just the fact that he gets up and goes to work as a man every day
is huge opportunity.
It's huge opportunity. Just the fact that he's willing to dress up and put a tie on instead of go lay in his bedroom and watch Netflix.
Yeah,
that is a man. In a world where the bar has never been lower, is the bar. The bar of your generation or the greatest generation, everybody had to be stinking Nathaniel Wilson to do anything. Well, in this world, the bar is set so low that just being an average,
used to be average
kid,
to be an
apostolic kid, you are like
light years
ahead in every way. And so it's literally, there's never been a time that I've been more excited about being apostolic Pentecostal because it's literally our kids know how. Okay, we have kids right now at campus ministry, little to no training. Okay, if you would have sent millennials to campus ministry with little to no training, we're training them, but we're training them on the job. Okay, but if you would have sent millennials with little to no, if you'd have sent my generation to Sac State for campus ministry with no training, we would have got our heads bashed in. We wouldn't have had the intellectual debate, that all this kind of stuff. You have to be prepared. The little to no training, these Gen Z kids are just
stepping into it.
And they're the ones bashing heads because they're so much elevated because they're actually disciplined. They actually know,
communication skills,
everything.
Because kids that are locked on a phone or a computer all day are really, it's one thing to interact on a phone, but it's another thing to interact face to face. And which, you know, we grew up in the day where you answered the phone and had to have a conversation. This generation, if they don't want to take it, they don't answer it. And if it's something I'm going to have to deal with, I'm not going to take it. And so we've learned to distance ourselves from confrontation or communication. Whereas a Pentecostal kid's in a constant faithful environment where they're interacting at church outside of their computer, outside of their phone. They're in youth camp, they're in youth service, they're in Sunday school. So church is impacting them. So they're learning to communicate where many of their peers are behind a screen and behind a phone.
Yeah. There's the communication, the requirements to, like, realistically, if you're an apostolic, you don't just come to church. If you're in the youth group, you're required to do so. You're hopefully helping out with Sunday school or in the choir or doing some sort of ministry. Okay. In this world, just doing one basic little thing like that, you're getting put head and shoulder. The discipline to get up and actually go to church.
So you're recognizing that what these young people are looking for is cause, is purpose. And the thing that wants them to go to the village in the Andes Mountains instead of the Disneyland resort on the beach, they're wanting to go experience it. They want to feel like they make a difference. They want to get out of their little box. And they saw the mountains on their phone or the Netflix video, and now they can walk where where the climber went, or they can surf where that, you know, the Nazare, you know, where the world's large. So they've been, I didn't even know where those places were growing up, but now they've got it at a phone. You're leveraging this something, whatever that is, looking for purpose, looking to be involved. You're not diminishing, like with less church. The success I'm seeing is you're pushing young people into ministry to do more. So how are you integrating in our church? You're starting the branch work in the Sierras. How much emphasis or how much of what you're doing involves Gen Z?
So on my team, I think there's only maybe three people that are not Gen Z that are building the church. They're the ones doing the work. Right now, we have small groups going. It's
four small groups going,
and
right?
Gen Z are teaching all of them.
So you're trusting Gen Z already.
Yeah.
And they're growing as they're working in the field.
Because it's not even a trust thing. Maybe this is not something I should say, but it's not a trust thing. It's a Gen Z knows more than the rest of us. Is that they have constant access to any information, constant access to if emergency, if there's a question they don't know, they can figure out how to get the answer.
They can get knowledge.
It's not just because I'm trying to fill this Gen Z quota. I actually think they're the best people for the job.
Okay.
They have, and this is the thing, is you have these kids that are doing something. And so whereas millennials, we would think of ourselves as, I'll use Colby. Okay, because he's teaching my small group right now. My biggest small group, Colby teaches it. Okay, a millennial, my inner dialogue, if I go to teach, was, man, there's all these adults here. They're so much older. They're so much smarter than me. They're all this kind of stuff. Colby doesn't think that, because Colby grew up when you could be 18 years old and have a multi-million dollar business that you started from scratch with yourself, with none of your daddy's money. And he's seen, you're this 19 year old chess master that just beat this guy. So Colby doesn't think of him, despise the youth thing. Colby doesn't do that. The Gen Z don't do that, because they've been exposed to, no, I can be a great man or woman at 18 years old. Okay. So he goes out and just boldly does the job. But then at the same time, I'm kind of, if you're listening and you're from Cameron Park, plug your ears. I'm kind of jailbreaking the equation, because there's a little bit of an inspiration factor to these millennials and these middle-aged people and these grandparents, that this 18-year-old kid, this 16-year-old kid is doing this. If this kid can do it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of working on both ends.
I was talking to Ryan Crosley a while back, and he was telling me some of his most, his church is experiencing exponential growth in Hollywood, Miami metro. He was telling me that some of his most effective small group leaders are 16, 17 years old. And he said they take the material, they digest it, they learn it, and then they just go interact and they make it happen. They don't try to preach. They just do the job. They feel like they're fulfilling a purpose. And it's working. The church is growing. You got four small groups now. The youth group has doubled, and we're headed into only God knows where this thing goes. So with Gen Z, do the people in your space, is there talk about what's next? Like, what's, is there a group after Gen Z, or do we have to live a while and figure that out?
No, it's Generation Alpha is the terminology.
So that would your kids be Generation Alpha?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, they're Generation Alpha, but
we don't know a lot about what that's going to be.
Exactly what that means. And this is one of my favorite researchers on Gen Z is a guy named Emery White. And one of his big things, and this is why it's debatable within Gen Z study people, but Gen Z is the last true generation because it's speeding up so fast. Okay, so AI, the world changed dramatically. Okay, so what is that? Is that
we don't know what that does.
Okay,
yet.
So how do you compare a kid that grew up with an iPhone? Think about kid that grew up where an iPhone was revolutionary to a kid that grows up with AI. Okay. It's nothing alike. Okay, that's more different than
and
growing up.
And then who
in
controls
World War
II the AI and, shapes what their whole mentality becomes.
Yeah.
So we don't even know where that goes.
So yeah, so that's where it's like. Well, it's also why it's important for us to figure out AI and actually be a part of the space instead of just being afraid of it, because we won't get into that.
Yeah. No. I think you're right, because one of the things that I have noticed is, and it was a little while to learn this, is I grew up in the God Bless America days. I remember the Ronald Reagan era. I remember when the space shuttle Challenger blew up. I mean, there's a lot in my memory. When I was born, the Vietnam War was nearing an end. So I've seen a lot in my life, and the world is so vastly different now than when I was a teenager. And there's a part of me that's like, my God, the world's gone to hell in a handbasket, and it's chaos and it's fearful. And I talk to people that it's almost like we wish we could go back to the good old days. And there's a fear, and you talk to people my age, it's, you know, how bad. But when I talk to Gen Z, this is the only world they've ever known. Mm-hmm. And so they're not afraid of whatever this is. You know, the world is radically different. If you're 60 years old, the world's radically different, and only God knows what it's going to become. And that's real. Evil seducers shall wax worse and worse. But Gen Z, this is the world they grew up in, and they're not afraid of it. They're functioning. They're living. If we can get them on the purpose and we can get them in the cause, I believe this could be, from an apostolic perspective, the greatest generation. If they buy in, if they get fully acclimated to what it means to be a true apostolic believer, living, walking, being what God's called them to be. And I think you're doing an outstanding job with, as the pastor of the church, I'm thrilled. I was the youth pastor here many years ago, and I will say, in my number, I've been pastor here since 1998. The youth group is in a place of revival it has never been in. It's growing, it's thriving, it's doing the work of God, and we have part of Gen Z and younger millennials that are working in our branch ministries that are now missionaries. We have Gen Zers, the older part of Gen Zers, that are working as interns on foreign soil. And so they're buying into this dream.
We have Gen Zers that are missionaries.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So this is a new day. So I really believe that this podcast today could make a difference for somebody. And I would encourage pastors, youth pastors, I asked an elder probably in his early 70s, maybe his late 60s, and I asked him, I said, if you could do anything over, what would you do different? And he said, I would use people more often than I did sooner and not wait for them to become perfected. And I've thought about that a lot of times, and I'm looking at Gen Z. They haven't figured life out yet. They've got a lot of growing up to do. They've got a lot of challenges. But I'm watching them right now in this world. I'm watching right here in this city and in our missions efforts. I'm watching them be already highly effective, doing things for God that previous generations, and there's exceptions. I don't want to cross swords with people that are wanting to fight. But I'm looking at young people stepping up. And there's new opportunities that people have never had before. I did a podcast out of the boat with some guys last week, and they've got a big following from all over the world. And we were talking about it is divine opportunity. I mean, where else could three guys sit down at a table in a suburb and touch the world in just a matter of moments? Like literally thousands and thousands of people. No Limits, one night, one of the songs we sang went online and somebody told me it's 89,000 views. Well, my God, where would that have ever happened? Where would you ever get to sing to 89,000 people? Well, that's just common now.
Also, can I just interject? Yeah. Is there's also a pretty interesting dynamic for these guys and girls is, okay, so I grew up in a pastor's home. You grew up in a pastor's home. Okay. So there's conversations that I was privy to about ministry, about growth, about missions, about preaching, about all that I got to hear you and Douglas Walker and you and Nathaniel Urshan and you and, okay, I got to hear those stories and hear those conversations firsthand. Well, for all generations previous, it was only me as a preacher's kid. It was only the preacher's kids that got to hear
those. Didn't have exposure to that.
Okay. Well, now through the advent of podcasts, you now get to be a, if I'm just some random kid from Cameron Park, I can now sit down and listen to an intimate conversation between Miles Young and whoever, but Luke St. Clair. I can listen to multiple, you know, pick your favorite preacher. If they have a podcast, I can sit down and listen to a conversation. I can be in the room with them unless you were just born into the right family, you couldn't hear these conversations. Whereas now, just there's an avenue to actually be able to hear these conversations. I can sit down and listen to Douglas Walker talk about books. Okay, they're random kids, even if they're from a good church, don't get that. Because when he's here, he doesn't have time to talk to every kid in the Rock Church about books. But I can go listen to him talk for 2 hours about some book that I'm not smart enough to read, and he can unravel, and it's just, okay, so what does that do?
That puts a responsibility on us leaders to provide insights, because their young people have an opportunity, and many of them are going to the Jordan Petersons, the Joe Rogans, the list goes on, where we need to be in this space providing alternatives that help push the kingdom. We're not doing this for likes. We're not doing this for a following to have a following. We're trying to influence the world for good with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Get to talking. Young people want this. They need this. And the world's looking for answers. And man, let's make a difference. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Yes, sir.